Hi there, it's Julia Louis-Dreyfus. You may know me from my podcast called Wiser Than Me, where I talk to older women and get their wisdom from the front lines of life. I was amazed by how many people told me our show made them look forward to getting older, which is why I'm here to talk about season two of the show. Sally Field, Billie Jean King, Beverly Johnson, Ina Garten, Bonnie Raitt, just to name a few. All hail old women. Wiser Than Me season two is out now from Lemonada Media.
What's up, nerds? This is Just a Couple of Arslings, the Last Kingdom podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Jessica Toomer.
And I'm Alyssa Fixie. We are writers for Sci-Fi Wire's Fangirls who started recapping The Last Kingdom in Season 3, so we decided to bring that nerdy, horny energy to Podcastlandia. Jessica, this is our second-to-last episode.
Oh my God, we're
almost
done. We're almost done with Season 3, which means, like, we're going to be done until, you know, Season 4 comes out, which I'm assuming, I think they stopped filming in October of this year, so it's probably not going to be until late spring.
Yeah, spring 20,
early summer.
Spring 2020, I think, is what people are saying, but there's, you know, no official release date yet, which, you know.
Yeah, maybe they'll surprise us and, right. like, drop it super early, I don't know, but. Yeah, it's kind of sad.
I know. Like, it's been kind of crazy, but, like, it'll be a little sad.
I mean, I guess, like, the thing to think about is, you know, if you guys miss us, you can always just re-listen to episodes.
Right. Find us on Twitter.
I'm not, like, vain enough to think people are going to be doing that. But, hey, I mean, whatever floats your boat.
Right. Right. Anyway. But, yeah.
Yeah, they're not doing that.
No.
So I think for our small talk today,
yeah.
we're going to discuss something that's been in the news recently. And I feel like it relates to the show a little bit, too, only because they kind of live in the same, I wouldn't necessarily say genre, because Game of Thrones is fantasy, but there's a lot of similarities between Game of Thrones and The Last Kingdom.
Sure.
And I think one of them is, maybe not this season, it hasn't been super thirsty, but I mean, like, nudity in any kind of drama show, that's, it's become the norm.
Yeah.
What we want to talk about today is the Emilia Clarke stuff.
Yeah, she went on Dax Shepard's podcast, Armchair Expert, and she talked about how she felt a lot of pressure to appear nude on Game of Thrones early on. Which you can definitely tell, it's one of those things, like, when you watch especially the first season of Game of Thrones and somewhat in the second, there's a lot more of that, you know, sex position, which is what it kind of got dubbed with that first season. There was a lot of nudity, particularly women's nudity. It's never male nudity. It's just women's nudity.
Always women.
Mm-hmm. And that kind of followed her into other jobs. And she talked about how she would kind of have fights on set and say, no, I want to stay covered for this scene. And people would tell her, you don't want to disappoint your Game of Thrones fans, do you? Which is just, that's obscene. Like, that's just unacceptable behavior. And
so gross.
Yeah. I hate that for her, because she seems so delightful and just like such a, I don't know, she works hard. She's so sweet. Seemingly. I say that as someone who has never met Emilia Clarke, but the image that she projects is a very positive one.
Mm-hmm. Well, look, she survived like 2 brain aneurysms, okay? She's
right.
been through enough.
She's been through so much, and just like, and that last season of Game of Thrones in and of itself, she got screwed over.
She did the best she could with what she was given.
She did great with what she was given, but yeah. And I hate that, you know, she talked about how, you know, she was fresh out of drama school and she just sort of felt like she needed to say yes to everything because it was her first big job, you know?
Yeah, I think she was like 23. She was very young.
Very young and very green. And yeah, she, you know, she credited working with Jason Momoa as sort of a way that she learned to stand up for herself, because he kind of told her, you know, this is okay, this isn't okay. And, you need to tell people when it's not okay, which is a scary thing to learn, especially as a young woman and you're, you know, starting out in your industry. It's really hard to say, no, this isn't okay, when you don't feel secure in your job. So, yeah, I hated that followed her for so long. And she's talked in the past about how she's turned down roles that had nudity because she didn't want it to be like her thing. Like, I know specifically, like, she turned down the role of the lead in 50 Shades of Grey, which, like, fine, she deserves way better than that. But like, but I hate that she felt like she had to turn down opportunities because people always just see her as like the naked dragon queen. And that's a bummer. And she deserves better than that.
Yeah, it's such a weird thing, too, because I feel like with this show, with Game of Thrones especially, there was such like a fervor around it when it first started. I mean, it's got a huge fan base from the books. And so I feel like especially her nudity, because she was playing this character that was beloved, when she appeared nude on screen, I don't know, it felt like it was... It wasn't just like your regular show where you're taking off your clothes. Like, I mean, there were, I saw like really gross things on the internet about it from fans of the books or the shows who just like, I guess that really did it for them. I don't know. But it just felt like so, it felt really gross in a way, really violating because, you know, this is just, she's trying to do her job. She, this is a material that is heavy in the violence and heavy in the nudity, so you know you're going to have to do some things, but you don't want it to live on the internet in ways you didn't intend. You know what I mean? You're doing it for the show.
Right.
You don't mean for your body to be taken and put in other
contexts.
Yeah, exactly. That's where it gets really kind of gross to me. And so, like, I think about this show, which does, I think it treats nudity and violence so much better. I mean, there's, you know, every show has its faults, but I just feel like, yeah, those first couple seasons of Game of Thrones, it was almost like, how much can we do?
Right.
Like, you know what I mean?
And I think they should have trusted the material more to, like, hook people than, you know, throwing tits on screen every time they could, but whatever, it's done. Game of Thrones is over.
What's
sort
done
of
is done.
Right. We don't talk about it.
Will it
anymore.
Ever be over? I don't know.
I don't know.
Please don't look at Emilia Clarke and just like picture her naked. That's not cool. She deserves better. Every actress deserves better.
Yeah.
And props to Jason Momoa for being
an ally.
A true gentleman, a woke bro. I knew it. I mean,
I love,
Lisa Bonet
I love
doesn't have that
bro.
Taste.
Yes, Lisa Bonet knows what's up. Gotta love a woke bro. It's the best.
All right, well, speaking of woke bros, let's
talk about Uhtred.
Let's talk about Uhtred. And you know what? Let's talk about Alfred too.
Okay?
Very surprised.
Yeah. I love these last scenes with Alfred and Uhtred and... it's just, it kills me because I feel like I wish they could have talked about this sooner. Like, not just when Alfred is like, I need to make amends before I die. But I feel like they could have done such great things if they had been in this kind of harmony earlier on. And I guess that's the hindsight of death that, you know, Alfred is feeling that he can be this way. Yeah. So he's, you know, he's showing Uhtred this Chronicle of Wessex, which sort of details from his brother's death until his own, everything that's happened during his kingship, and except anything that includes Uhtred. Uhtred is conspicuously absent from the pages. But yeah, I think this the fact that this document is so important to Alfred in the end is it's his way of ensuring that his legacy lives on. Like, yes, he has Edward, but Edward will die eventually too, so... If you really want to be remembered, you got to write it down.
Yeah, I think, you know, Uhtred, in this kind of conversation that they have, Uhtred feels the more noble. I mean, he's like, I did good deeds. Men will remember that. And that's like a really, that's a nice sentiment.
Mm-hmm.
But Alfred is very
practical.
Smart. And he's practical. And so he knows if he wants people to say good things about him, he's got to write it down himself.
Mm-hmm.
That's what history is. It's men, mostly men, writing things and making people believe them. You know, so I think Alfred kind of, it just intuitively knows that. And he knows that if his dream of a united England is going to continue, if his reign is going to be looked on favorably, he has to write it down. Got to kind of glitter and gold, have really nice penmanship. These are some very elaborate diary entries.
Yes, very elaborate.
He's not wrong. I mean, he's a bit of an asshole for basically telling Uhtred that he's going to be forgotten and it'll only be Alfred that is remembered. Like, right. Fuck you, dude.
Yeah.
But he also kind of in a backhanded way compliments Uhtred and is like, you know what? No one will know that you did this, but I will know.
Yeah.
So it's almost like, okay, you know, I think for Uhtred, what's more important to him is the now, and to have Alfred appreciating him in this moment, it means a lot.
It does. It really does. And I think Uhtred, here's the thing. Even though they've been at odds for so long, like Uhtred tells him, like, he never would have been able to kill him. You know, that's not what he wanted. Even in that, you know, in that hallway with a knife to his throat, he never would have actually done it. But he also tells Alfred, you know, I earned my place in these pages. And I hate that it's taken this far, you know, this long for Alfred to kind of realize that.
That will not happen. Because I lack the will. Because we are bonded. You cannot kill me. Just as I cannot kill you.
He, you know, Alfred kind of, even though he can barely lift a sword, he kind of threatens Uhtred and is like, what if I just killed you now? But he can't because they're bonded.
And also physically,
I don't think he could pierce the skin. But yeah, like they both really acknowledge in this moment they did this together. Like whether or not they like each other now, whether or not history will remember exactly how it happened, they know and they did it as a team, even if it was sometimes quite tense.
It's really, I mean, it's such a quiet kind of emotional scene.
Very.
Between these two men who none of their interactions have been like this. Mm. They've not, none of them have been this subdued and this resigned. I think this whole situation that Alfred finds himself in, he's destined for the grave. He looks like he's going to star in a Tim Burton movie. I mean, he just
it's
looks
true.
Terrible.
He looks exactly like Johnny Depp's character in The Corpse Bride at this point.
Yes, that's exactly that
that's
was giving
exactly
me so
it.
Many feels.
Yes.
Thank you, Alyssa. Yeah, so it's just, I think it's like you said, it's that thing of, you know, death is a scary thing. It's also a freeing thing because it lets you look back, you know, on your choices really with without those rose colored glasses. And I think that Alfred realizes he's made some mistakes. He's trying to make amends for them. Yes, he has ulterior motives because he asked Uhtred to stay in Winchester just until Edward can be crowned, just to kind of be there to maybe lay to rest some worries that in the rumors that people are spreading. But it's so interesting how he does that because, you know, Alfred, anytime Alfred has asked for a favor from Uhtred, he's basically demanded it and demanded he swear an oath and held something over his head. And this interaction, you see, he just asks him and he doesn't need an answer. He just wants to put that question out there and he wants it to be Uhtred's choice. And I think that's such a shot, like a sign of respect.
Yeah.
And you can tell it hits Uhtred in the feels a little bit.
It really does. And, you know, they have this moment too where Uhtred wants to know, like, why Alfred brought his children to Winchester. And basically, and Alfred, like, straight up tells him, I did it to inflict pain. Like, I did it to damn you. And he admits, like, this is the big thing for me, because I feel like Alfred, sometimes he's known that he's done wrong, but he never, like, admits it out loud. He admits to him that it was a bad move. He tells him that it was petty. He tells him that, you know, it was a provocation and he didn't give him the respect and trust that he deserved through that whole situation. And it's a really like moving thing. And then I kind of liked how they edited this episode and how they intercut the scenes of these two men having, you know, this moment of peace together with everything that's going on at the wedding feast, which is just nobody's having a good time. Like,
it's a medieval wedding.
Right.
What do you expect?
I mean, at least nobody died, but like nobody's having a good time. Like Æthelflaed and Æthelred are sniping at each other and at Alhelm. Æthelwald is trying to like get the new father-in-law pissed because, you know, Edward had another kid or had a couple of kids. and a previous wife. And, you know, it's just it's not going very well.
I mean, Ethelwald is stirring up shit as he does. But his chat with Ethelhelm, you know, so we go from Alfred and Uhtred to Ethelwald and Ethelhelm, who, you know, is not really wanting to hear what Ethelwald has to say. I mean, he's got that nasty wound that's uncovered.
Disgusting.
It's super off-putting. Yeah. Like, not over my salad, Ethelwald. Like, gross.
Should you not cover that wound? I find it ugly, off-putting.
Oh, you refer to my eye. Well, I see it as a reminder of my loyalty to the crown, wherever the crown may eventually rest.
The crown will rest on Edward's head.
With luck. But that is just one possibility.
But he basically tells Ethelhelm, you know, Edward married this girl, so her kids are legitimized. That puts your daughter and her future children
at
jeopardy.
Risk. Yeah.
That's a big deal. I mean,
and
it's
not
just
wrong,
like,
though.
Oh, he hooked up.
Like,
yeah,
he's telling him to cause trouble, but also back then, he's 100% correct. Those children would definitely come for the crown, especially if there's a son. This is information that they really should have disclosed.
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously they were trying to pull one over on this guy. They needed Edward.
They needed his money.
To...
They needed his power. They needed his men.
And they needed, they needed a lot from him. And so he's not happy about being in the dark about this, which is exactly how Ethelwald wants him to react. And Ethelwald, you know, kind of meets up with Sigebrit at one point. And, you know, I can tell that Sigebrit is like totally over Ethelwald, but he also hates Edward. So it's
right.
like,
which side do I hate more?
Exactly.
Speaking of hatred, Aelswith finds out that Uhtred is still here and is super pissed about it. Like, she is so mad, partially because, like, Alfred's in here talking to him instead of being at his son's wedding, which I kind of understand. But also, like, she is so mad that Uhtred isn't being murdered on the spot. Like, she expected him to be executed right there. And yeah, she's so mad that he's pardoned. She's so mad that he is sort of there with Alfred in the end. And I think, you know, I think Alfred, he extends her quite a bit of grace. You know, she storms out, he tells her, he's like, she's just mad that I'm dying. You know, it doesn't make her heartless. Her heart is hurting. But also I'm kind of like, yeah, but like she's wanted Uhtred dead for a while.
Yeah, it would have been better if she had walked in on Alfred, like, humping a servant girl.
I think she would have preferred that, honestly.
I agree. Yeah, she is just so, she's so enraged.
Yeah.
And I think it doesn't help that she's had to sit through this wedding dinner watching Ethelwald also scheme. Mm-hmm. So she feels like she's facing so many threats, and they're all because Alfred has not had, you know, the courage to do what needed to be done. And so there's resentment there, you know, because she's going to be left to pick up the pieces when he dies.
Right.
And I think it's hard for her to understand that Alfred is thinking, you know, way farther ahead. And he's thinking about more than just, you know, the religious reputation of his reign. He's worried that Edward is not ready and that people are going to take advantage of that. He tells Uhtred that, you know, there are good Christian men dining in his hall right now that will be tempted by, you know, the wealth and the power that this transition will afford them. And so I think he can recognize that even these men that are Christian and are, you know, praying in the church with them every Sunday, whatever, they will still come for that throne. And I don't know if that's something Aelswith really believes. Like, I feel like she's so pious, like in ways that are not the same as Alfred.
Yeah, well, and, you know, there's that moment where Alfred is talking to Uhtred and he tells him that he remembers how he saved him as an infant and he mentions Isolde by name.
Thank God.
Yes. And I think Uhtred is kind of shocked by that. But again, that's kind of shows the difference between Alfred and Aelswith. Like, I'm sure she doesn't remember that woman as anything other than a witch. Like, I'm sure, you know, she still thinks they did the wrong thing, even though it saved Edward. But Alfred, you know, he's always outwardly sort of, you know, spoken out against the, you know, the heathen pagan religion of the Danes and all that. But at the same time, like, he's seen it work in his favor before. And I think he recognizes that, especially with what happened with Edward when he was so young. But yeah, so he asks Uhtred to sort of remain in Winchester until Edward is crowned king. And then after that, he can do what he wants. Like, he pardons him, so he's no longer an outlaw. You know, Alfred sort of made his peace and they've reconciled and they have a tender moment where they like touch hands. And it's just it's a really powerful scene. And I feel like both actors, you know, David Dawson and Alexander Draiman, both really brought it for this scene together. And, you know, after everything they've been through, like this was a pretty beautiful way to kind of tie this one off with a bow.
I should have closed my eyes and rattled at Heaven's gates some time ago. It was the hope of this meeting that has kept me alive. To Uhtred, the true Lord of Pepermere. A man I have never understood, but without whom I would not die again.
This scene reminds you how important of a character Alfred is and has been to this show.
Yeah.
And I mean, this was his due. I think it would have just felt so wrong if him and Uhtred had not had this time. And at one point he even says, you know, I think I've been holding on to death so that I could talk to you one last time.
That's
just such a beautiful thing for him to say.
Yeah.
Because, you know, obviously he has worries and he wants Uhtred's help, but I think really at the heart of it, it's this idea of, you know, I know I did you wrong, mm-hmm. and I can't leave this earth without making that right. And so, super sweet, got a little choked up.
Yeah.
I mean, there might have been dust in my eye when I was watching, who knows?
Yeah.
someone who doesn't find this all warm and cuddly is Aelswith, who returns to the hall super pissed off, lies to Edward about it, tells Steoppa to have his guards at every corridor. She wants Uhtred gone. She has some plans for him once Alfred is dead.
Yeah.
That I just can't believe are good. And yeah, she's already kind of preparing for what will be her almost reign. I mean, I feel like she's gonna have a lot of influence. Puppet strings.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think everybody's kind of feeling that tension right now. Like, Athelred, like, during the feast, he told Aldhelm to send for more men to come here, which would be seen really as an act of aggression. Like, you don't need that, you know, an army at a wedding. And Aldhelm recognized that, and he kind of tells him later on when Athelred's, you know, getting it on with some ladies, Aldhelm is like, listen, we cannot do this. And he doesn't follow his orders. And I think Athelred, like we've mentioned in the past, like how Aldhelm is so over it. And Athelred is starting to sort of pick up on that, even though he's, you know, a self-serving idiot. But yeah, like this once great bro duo is starting to fracture as one of them is growing a conscience and one of them is, you know, completely devoid of reason.
So delusional.
Athelred just...
He's stupid. He's just stupid.
He is. He's stupid and he thinks he is smart, which I think is the most dangerous kind of stupid.
Yeah. And speaking of stupid, we kind of take a break from all of the wedding festivities in Winchester to check up on the Danes.
Who are losing their minds. They're just like so bored hanging out waiting for Alfred to die.
It's like Lord of the Flies over here.
It is. Like, which one is Piggy? Because he's toast. But yeah, like they're just fighting it out. Canute is kind of like egging them on. And Heston is the voice of reason, which is insane. When Heston is the...
We're in the upside down.
Right. If Heston is the voice of reason, you are royally screwing up your life. But yeah, they're just like fighting each other and getting out all this aggression as they, you know, wait and wait and wait. And Canute is like totally chill. Heston is like, this is bad. They need to stop or they're going to hurt themselves. And Brita's team Heston at this point and is telling him the
crazy,
same thing. I know.
I mean, I don't blame her. Like, it's super annoying and frustrating to just watch your men who they have too much pent up energy at this point and they're just knocking each other around. And I think Heston like rightly warns Canute. He's like, you know, we need to stop this before they start reaching for weapons and we start losing men. And, you know, that redheaded blood, or I don't know what it is, but he is like all about these mud fights.
Yeah.
And then he's all about betting Brita, who is just so not into it.
She's even more unimpressed
than like with Uhtred in season one.
Right.
Remember that
moment
by the fire?
Yes.
It's like even that was better than
whatever's going on in
whatever
Canute's
he's
tent.
Doing.
Yeah. God. But she does get an important bit of information from him, and that is that Athelwold is the one who killed Ragnar. She can't quite believe it, but it's the truth. And she claims him as hers to kill, which, you know, that might be a bit presumptuous to assume that Athelwold will definitely be on the battlefield when he's so prone to hiding. But yeah, so she knows who she has to kill now. So Uhtred just has to get her the blood.
Yeah. And speaking of, we go back to Winchester. Poor Tira.
I hate this whole storyline. I really do.
Okay. I think we should take a second because I'm really unimpressed with what they've done with this character, Tira. I don't understand the purpose any of it has served if what I think is going to happen happens.
Well, I mean, we know what happens. But like I'm
trying not to spoil it for people.
Listen, it's fine. We don't have to pretend like we don't know. But yeah,
okay, you're right.
Well, I think we should talk about it more in the next episode.
You're right.
Everything goes down. But like this is another storyline that they added in on the show. It was not in the book.
Ugh, okay, fine. Anyway, so Tira's in Winchester. She's getting hassled by this dude, Tidman.
Yeah.
God.
I watch it with subtitles, so I make sure that I get the names right, and it's Tidman.
That just sounds like a douche. He's one of Sigebreet's men. Athelwold kind of, you know, tells him to back off if he's going to insult her, harass her, do it in private because he's got scheming to do.
Yeah.
And Tira is super shaken by this encounter. I mean, she's a strong woman, but she's been through a lot and she doesn't need this. And so she returns home. You know, all the boys are there kind of planning. And of course,
Hild recognizes that she is in distress.
Yes, sisterhood.
Hild is a real one. I love her so much.
Such a real one. And so she tells the guys what happened. And
Beoka
is not having it.
Right.
What is it you want, priest?
What I want, Oaf, is for you to heed my warning. Speak to or go near my wife again, and I shall beat the shit from you.
Oh, well said.
It is a promise.
Beoka's a good husband. Like,
he's such a good
like,
bro.
Sometimes I'm frustrated with Beoka, but, like,
yeah.
He will go to the mat for Tira every time.
Yeah, he's a peacock.
Yes, even when he doesn't like her doing her, you know, pagan
her
blood
rituals.
Stuff, he will, like, he'll get over it. And, yeah, he's a good husband, better than I expected.
Yeah, so he's stomping through the village. You know, Finnan and Citric and Osferth and Uhtred are kind of tagging behind him. There's this really funny moment when Uhtred is like, you know, maybe I should take care of it because you have a bit of a temper.
Right.
Which, come on. Like,
I mean, it's true. Like,
it is true. But we also did just see Uhtred, like, mutilate a man with an arrow last episode.
True. So
but Beoka is way more pissed than Uhtred in this
kettle.
Point.
At this point.
Yeah,
But yeah, so he, you know, he finds him, he attacks him, he basically tells him, you know, leave my wife alone or I'll beat the shit out of you, literally. But yeah, so it's a really tense confrontation. Beoka is, you know, back to his ultimate sass master mood. And
love it.
Yeah, so he's, you know, it gets violent. Athelwold shows up. Nobody's happy to see him. Things are getting tense, you know, as Alfred is, you know, stepping towards the grave. People are getting a little bolder and it's not great for, you know, avoiding discord in the public square.
Yeah, you can tell, you know, this whole Alfred on the brink of death thing is really affecting the mood. And the people that are suffering are, you know, people on the fringes, people who maybe can't defend themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Athelwold is, of course, they are just egging everything on. Uhtred has this really great moment, though, where he tells Athelwold, your soul is as scarred as your face.
Right, nobody likes you.
What a burn.
That's a great burn.
Such a good burn. I'm saving that one. but, yeah, so Ethelwald kind of takes this opportunity. Once Beoka, like, leaves to calm down, he invites Uhtred in for a drink. And he kind of tries to suss out, I think him and Sigrid both are trying to suss out where he falls. Like, which side is he on? Who is he for? Is he with Edward? Doesn't go, you know, as I'm sure Ethelwald wanted it to go, because Uhtred doesn't say anything.
Right. I think at this point, like, that's such an insane question that Uhtred is just like, I'm not even going to give this guy the satisfaction of saying anything. Like, I'm just going to go.
Yeah.
Which I think shows a little growth on Uhtred's part, that he's willing to just let something go and leave instead of starting a fight.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, it's, you know, and then even more, like, there's so many little relationships kind of blowing up all over the place in this episode. You know, there's that moment in the church when Athelhelm is talking to Aelswith, and he basically tells her, hey, wouldn't life be a lot better if those children were just murdered and I didn't have to think about them ever again?
Wouldn't it be great if we killed those
wouldn't
babies?
Wouldn't it be great if we literally struck down children? Like, that's a sign of a bad guy.
That's what we should be, talking about in a holy place.
Right. This is
insane.
Right. That's perfect church talk, murdering children. But yeah, so, like, there's that tension. And then there's, you know, Bishop Erkenwald, who talks about how much he hates Uhtred to Uhtred's face, and how he thinks it's stupid that the king has pardoned him. And it's just everybody is at each other's throats in this episode. It is tense as hell.
I have no place. I'm not a husband. I'm not Uhtred of Cookham. Not Uhtred of Bevanbell. I'm not Uhtred Ragnarsson. I'm not even an outlaw anymore.
I would say you're each and all of those men.
Yeah, and I think the mood is also really affecting Uhtred in interesting ways, because so he has this little confrontation with the bishop.
And then Hild shows up.
Sweet Hild. And she's like, look, I know something's on your mind. Just, like, spit it out. And, you know, Uhtred gets a bit angsty. And he's like, I'm not a husband. I'm not a Ragnarsson. I don't have Bebbanburg. I don't have Cookham. I'm not an outlaw anymore. Like, what is my purpose?
Yeah.
And it's such an intimate conversation. It's such a big question. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for him to ask that of Hild shows, like, how strong their bond is. Like, he basically calls her his bestie, which I just squealed a little inside.
I love their dynamic. But yeah,
so good.
Yeah, she's his greatest friend. But she's also, I think, the one who's always willing to tell him the truth. Even if it's not, like, particularly comforting. But she's basically like, you need to grow up. Like, you're not cursed anymore. You have so many options. Like, what are you going to do? Because you can do anything you want at this point.
And then, of course, Aelswith comes and ruins the moment.
Of course, as she is wont to do.
Douses the mood.
It's terrible. But yeah, it's a beautiful moment. And I think, you know, that feeling that he has a choice now is sort of the big decider for him, and why he goes to Alfred as he's, like, dying. He comes to see him and tells him that he will remain in Winchester until Edward is crowned. He swears that to him. And I think it's largely because Alfred gave him a choice.
Yeah.
It wasn't something that he was manipulated into. It wasn't something that he was forced into. He was asked. And that made it something that he could, you know, do and still keep his head held high.
Yeah. And, you know, after Uhtred pays Alfred one last visit, you know, we see the next kind of moment we see is Aelswith at Alfred's bedside, you know, and even struggling for breath, she's annoying the hell out of the dude about Uhtred, and she worries that, you know, if a pagan guides Edward, that they'll continue to be punished. That's why the Danes are at their borders. It's a conspiracy.
Yeah.
it's a you know, belief, I guess. But she keeps kind of going on and on about that. And you see Edward, or you see Alfred, you know, saying, no, like, this is what I have to do for my England. And he dies. It's a really kind of quiet moment before he dies. And And he's, it's a pretty shitty thing that that's the last thing she says to him.
It's awful because he's like, you know, he says my love and he's like, you know, kind of calling to her to come to him as he's like dying. The breath is leaving his body and she's still berating him over everything with Uhtred. And I think that's going to haunt her because he died with her bitching him out. And that is not something that'll, you know, rest easy on your conscience for a long time. If ever.
That would haunt me for sure. And I think, you know, we do see her struggle with that. So she realizes he's dead. She calls for Beoka and they have this kind of tender moment where she's, I mean, it's almost at first, it's like she can't believe that he's dead. God wouldn't let this happen. He has so much to do. And then she kind of plays around with the thought of, well, I'll tell the kids, you know, and you know Beoka, but maybe no one else has to know. And there's just a lot of fear there. There's fear of how it's going to be taken and what's going to happen next. And poor Beoka, I mean, obviously he's broken up about this because he loved Alfred, but he's also sitting here trying to kind of comfort this woman who's always been just such a bitch to him. And you can tell he's like, but he keeps offering like, well, he's in heaven now and, oh, well, he'll guide us or, you know, it's just like, oh, Beoka, just maybe just stay quiet. I don't think there's anything you can say to this woman.
Yeah. So, you know, we have that moment and like you can see, Aelswyth did love him, even if she was, you know, difficult at showing it. But yeah, so his family comes in, everybody's sad. It's, you know, they say it's the first day in a new land and it's a scary new land. You know, Alfred was, you know, he had a pretty secure position. A lot of people respected him, but, you know, what do you do now? And Aelswyth decides that what Aelswyth she's going to do now is she's going to force out Beoka because he was bonded with heathens and she's rescinding Uhtred's pardon.
Bishop Erkenwald has agreed that you may speak at the king's service, but that must be your final duty within the palace. You are bonded with heathens, Father Beoka. Edward must be God's king.
So she is immediately cutting out two men who are very influential to Alfred, which is kind of insane to me. Like, I understand, like, she wants, you know, all the paganness gone. She wants God only. But she also has eyes, and she also knows that both of these men were really, you know, influential to Alfred, and to be sort of cutting her son off at the knees just because she wants Jesus only in their rule, like, that is just such short-sighted thinking. And she's really setting her son up to fail by cutting these guys out.
Yeah, it's a terrible strategy on her part, I think. Not just because, you know, Uhtred is someone of value that could be really helpful to Edward, but because she is making these decisions and she is she's kind of going against what Alfred has said in his death. And so the only thing that does is make Edward look weak.
Yeah.
Because she's doing this. She's making these moves. You know, the Danes are going to see that and say, oh, this, you know, new king can't even make his own decisions.
His mama has to do it for him. Yeah.
Exactly. It's not a good look.
It's not a strong look. And that's what you need right now.
Yeah, you need to have your rule, you know, go unquestioned. At this point, Edward hasn't even been confirmed by a Witten. He's not been crowned. Like, this is not the time to be rescinding royal pardons. It's insane.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they have the funeral for Alfred.
But Uhtred, even though he knows that, like, you know, they'll come for him, he still shows up.
He's going to stay.
He still shows up at the funeral. And I think that's, you know, classic Uhtred.
Yeah, he made a promise. You know, when he gives his word, he keeps it.
Right.
And especially in this instance, he gave his word freely. And so that really means something. And so he shows up at the funeral knowing that his pardon has been rescinded. He plans to stay in Winchester until Edward's crowned. And, you know, he ends up kind of getting quietly escorted out of the funeral by Steapa. Poor dude. I mean, I know Steapa likes Uhtred. It must really suck to be constantly, like, being at odds with this dude, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like it would be difficult to be, you know, the king's man and, like, so beholden that, you know, you have to turn against your friends all the time. And, like, you know, he's always
a lonely life.
Right. And he's always getting snippy with Finnan, who always deals it back. So I'm like, he likes these men and he has, you know, a relationship with them, but he's, you know, king and country, I guess. So yeah, he gets thrown in jail and Tira, she gets, you know, sort of chased home by this, you know, by Athelwald's man Tidman again. And, you know, he like is just totally menacing and, you know, really cruel to her. And, he chases her all the way to her house and she sort of locks him out and gets in her hidey hole. And, you know, he breaks his way in. He sets everything on fire. And like he knows she's down there and he traps her down there. And it's just I hate this scene. I hate it so much.
It's the worst. It is the worst. I mean, it makes I understand. I don't understand.
Actually,
I'm not going to say I understand.
We're going to get into it more in the next episode, but I don't think there was a valid reason to do this. But yeah, so she's, you know, she kind of fights back and, you know, she stabs this man, which I feel like the message of having you fighting back, your attacker, and that's what sort of traps you at the same time. I feel like that's, I'm sure that wasn't an intentional message, but yikes.
That it comes across real bad.
It's really bad. And so, you know, like she's had so much trauma in her life and she's, you know, sort of leaving the show through such trauma. And I hate it. And we'll talk about it in the next episode more because I can't get into it right now or I'll just.
I'm not ready.
Black out in a rage.
Emotionally, I'm too fragile.
Yeah. And that's where the episode ends. Shit.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Now it's time for our next episode wishes. This is when we issue our demands for upcoming episodes like the spoiled toddlers that we are. Here's what we want to see, when we want to see it, and why we won't be denied. Alyssa, what are you looking forward to next episode?
I really want Edward to stand up to his mother. Like, I get
yes,
that he's
please.
Like, I get that he's dealing with a lot right now. Like, he lost his dad and gained a kingdom all in quick succession, and that is a lot. But she's like mad with power right now. She's, mm-hmm. you know, she's going against.
She's Cersei.
Yeah, she is. But like,
but not as smart.
I love Cersei so much, even though she was so evil. She deserved to die better. Anyway. But yeah, going against your dead husband's wishes before he's even in the ground is a really bad look. So yeah, I hope that Edward surprises me and is like, you know, a strong king, but I don't know if he's there yet. And yeah, I can't even talk about what happens to Jira.
Yeah, I mean, part of me is hoping maybe in my first watch, I watched it so quickly, I hallucinated what happened and something different will happen when I watch it again. But I hope that I don't have to see her die again. I might just, you know, fast forward through it.
Yeah.
Anyway, if we're burning people alive, I suggest Aelswith and Ethelwald. You know, they may not be on the same side, but they are both working to undermine England and Alfred in their own ways. And it's so frustrating.
Yeah. I just, you know, if they teamed up, they could get a lot more done, I think.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Well, if their goal was to just destroy England, for sure.
Right.
They'd have that done in like a day.
Right. But, you know. So, The Last Kingdom has a massive cast of interesting characters, and nearly everyone gets their time to shine. Our arsling of the episode is the character who truly goes above and beyond to win the war or simply win our hearts. So, who is your arsling this episode?
Okay, Beoka was totally my dude this episode. He saw Tyr upset, did not hesitate to kind of storm over there and confront this turd. You know, he would not let Uhtred kind of do his dirty work. He wanted to hand out the beatdown.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of upset that he wasn't allowed to finish him off. Like, Uhtred, just stay the fuck out of it for once. Let Beoka do what he wants to do.
Right.
But, you know, props to Beoka, because I think even though he's a priest, he's always been such a good husband to Tyra. He's what she needed and she's what he's needed. And I've seen real, like, growth and development because of their relationship, which I really like. I like when you pair people off in a show and then you show how that bond and relationship has changed them for the better. And I think with both characters that's happened. So
yeah,
shout out to Bioka.
I definitely agree. I feel the same way. I gotta give it up for Alfred. Like, it's our last, yeah, it's our last opportunity to give it to Alfred.
We got to, and we don't do it often.
Right. You know, he could have died bitter and, you know, still cursing Uhtred, but he really wanted to reconcile.
That's how Aelswyth's going to go out.
Right. Okay? Aelswyth is going out cursing Uhtred, I'm sure, however it happens. But yeah, like, he finally gave Uhtred the credit that he deserved and sort of made amends as well as he could. You know, like you said, like, he could have gone to his grave with this bad blood and kind of left Uhtred to deal with his bitterness alone. But he handled it in a manner, you know, that really befitted a good king. And I wasn't always, you know, Alfred's number one fan. I think that's pretty clear. But I think he handled himself with honor at the end. And I really will miss David Dawson a lot on the show. Mm. Like, he did such a good job, you know, bringing Alfred to life. And that'll be, I'm interested to see, you know, what the new season will be like, but that'll be a hole that is felt, I think.
Yeah, some hard shoes to fill for sure. Get ready to shame none, the worst character of the episode with us. It doesn't matter if you're a Saxon or a Dane, anyone can be a turd, and we're calling out the biggest one of the episode. So Alyssa, you go first. Who are you just hating on this episode?
Okay, well, Athelwold shithead Tidman was only here for one episode, but he really did leave a stain. Like, this guy has so much hate in his heart that he spent all of his screen time terrorizing sweet, innocent Tira, who's never as much as heard a fly in her entire life. I hated the storyline.
She is an angel.
She is an angel. And you should kiss the ground she walks on just for, like, being in your presence. But yeah, like, I hated the storyline. I hated him. You know, he's going to kill one of, if not the purest character on the show. And I hope he goes straight to hell. And I don't even believe in hell. So, but I hope he goes there.
Rotten Niflheim.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, Tidman, fuck you, dude.
Yeah.
I think for me, it was Aelswyth this episode.
Sure.
It's annoying. So I think Tidman is just an evil, terrible person. I think Aelswyth, she has some redeeming qualities. And so there's some times where I've really rooted for her to, like, turn things around.
Yeah.
And she just never has. And that's what's so frustrating about this character. Mm. You know, even on his deathbed, she's still harping on to Alfred about Uhtred's heathen ways and how they're poisoning his legacy, which is just, it's the worst way to say goodbye to this man that you loved and kind of served your entire life. That sucks. And, you know, she's making all these decisions without Edward's input or approval. Like, she obviously doesn't believe in her son's decision-making abilities. She's making him look weak. She's kind of, you know, undermining everything Alfred's done,
yes,
which is so disrespectful. He's not even in the grave. Yeah, there's just so many things that Aelswyth is doing wrong. And you know what? I wish she would just sit down. You know,
yeah,
Katie, you're making a fool of yourself.
It's true. And like you said, like, just with the undermining of his legacy, like, so quickly that he's gone, it's unforgivable. Now, this is clearly a very serious podcast about a very serious show, but sometimes it's nice to indulge in a little thirst. It's 2019, the world is on fire, and honestly, we deserve this. So this is our time to celebrate the thirstiest moments that really blew our skirts up this episode. There were none.
I mean, why are we even here? Why are we even doing this segment this season? Like,
I wander in the desert and there is nothing to ease my thirst. Like,
I am hallucinating. You know, my mirage is like a shirtless Uhtred at this point. It's just, it's so dry in here.
Yeah. Ugh. That's pretty much it. Everybody looks great, but yeah, nothing thirsty happening in this episode at all.
This is probably the greatest offense we've suffered with the show, is the fact that they have so many hot people and they can't make us thirst even a little
bit. Not even a little bit. Come on.
There's nothing.
Yeah.
Ugh.
I know.
All right, whatever.
Injustice.
Okay, guys, I think it's safe to say we've never been accused of being unenthusiastic in our fandom. We and our friends, our family, and now you, our devoted listeners. Welcome to Geek Out, where we will offer up our humble suggestions about what we think you should be watching and reading right now. And Alyssa, yours.
Okay.
What is yours?
It's not really a suggestion. It's more a general I don't understand what's happening. So
okay.
There was a trailer that came out today for a new adaptation of the novel Call of the Wild, which is one I read as a kid. I loved it. So, like, I, of course, wanted to watch the trailer. And it stars Harrison Ford, which I'm always kind of interested to see him, like, outside of Star Wars. And, like,
what is
I'm
he
like,
doing?
What
yeah.
are you doing? But okay, so if you don't know about Call of the Wild, it's this story about this man and he gets bonded with this dog and it's like really beautiful and whatever. But the dog in this trailer is CGI, but it's in a way that it's supposed to be, I think, kind of like how the Lion King animals were CGI and how it's just a little bit heightened. And the dog does things that a dog wouldn't really do, but also it's not like completely not dog-like. And I just, there are so many movies starring real dogs that I don't understand why you would go CGI for one that's a straight-up story about a dog.
Okay, yeah, that's super weird because I think you're insinuating that dogs aren't good actors.
How dare you?
Have you seen any of the Air Bud movies?
Yes.
Like, fuck you, yes. Hollywood.
Have you seen Air Bud? Have you seen Babe? Have you seen, you know, Old Yeller? Dogs can act. They do a good job. Stop taking
Homeward Bound. Homeward Bound.
Oh my God, I can't handle Homeward Bound. Don't even speak that name to me right now. But yeah, it was so weird in the trailer. If you haven't watched it, you should go watch it after we finish talking about it, because it was very off-putting. And I was like,
okay, but
yeah, I don't understand.
A quick question though, because I haven't read this book.
Okay.
So the dog, I'm looking at a picture, which, yeah, he looks weird.
Yeah.
But he's like a mountain dog or something.
It's like, I want to say
the Call of the Wild was like a wolf.
Yeah. And pretty, well, that's White Fang is the same Jack London. White Fang is the wolf. Call of the Wild, I think he's got wolf in him, but he's not a purebred wolf. Either way, it's super weird. It was a very odd trailer. I did not understand the tone.
Okay.
And I don't think Jack London would appreciate it. So he's probably spinning in his grave right now.
Actor dogs anywhere appreciate it. It's a tough business, okay?
Stop taking actor dogs' jobs.
Come on.
This is worse than resurrecting James Dean.
Oh my, well.
Maybe not.
It's almost on par.
Right.
All right, guys. So my geek out this week, I don't know if I've done this before. If I have, so sorry, but also not sorry, because you should be watching this when it comes out.
Yes.
The Witcher comes out on Netflix in December, and it's got Henry Cavill in it, which I'm on the fence about Henry Cavill.
Here's how I feel about Henry Cavill. I don't think he's particularly bright, but every time there's a new photo spread of him, I end up looking at it like all day. And one just came out.
Men's health pictures.
Oh my God. It's not right. It's not right. But yeah, like I, the only role that I've really loved him in is Man from U.N.C.L.E., which I wish we would get a sequel.
Loved Man from U.N.C.L.E.
It's so good. It's such a good movie. But yeah, I'm still interested in The Witcher. I'm not super familiar with the game or the books. My sister enjoys them, and she tried to teach me how to play the game and mostly just laughed at my incompetence. But yeah.
I've never played the games.
Okay.
I've read some of the books, so I'm interested to kind of see where they take it. There's so many avenues that they could take it between the games and the books.
Yeah, I think it'll be, I'm pretty sure it's more based on the books than the game.
I think so as well. But yeah, so it's basically, you know, it's this fantasy epic. It's got a lot in common with, I would say, like The Last Kingdom or Game of Thrones, in that like world. It's in that verse, you know, where it's kind of old medieval times and lots of horseback riding and lots of sorcery. And he's basically this monster hunter that has these supernatural powers. He goes on this quest to protect this princess. It's all very epic sounding. And I think it's got something for everyone. There's a ton of action. I'm sure it's going to be like really beautifully done because it's Netflix. And, you know, if you like to look at Henry Cavill shirtless, at least
it seems like
they
haven't
stripped him of his chest hair. That's all I'll say.
Thank God. I hate it when movies do that. Like,
it's an epidemic in Hollywood.
Especially like Marvel movies. Marvel movies started it, I think. But yeah, like it looks to be like a pretty good time, and it's already been renewed for a second season. So it's it's sticking around. So we'll see.
So go ahead and watch. I think if you're in that kind of drought of like, you know, Game of Thrones or The Last Kingdom, this might be like a good filler.
Yeah. All right, guys, if you want to hear more of our bullshitting, check us out on Twitter or over at Sci-Fi Wire Fangirls. Also, don't forget to like, subscribe, and leave us a nice review wherever you get your podcasts.
And until next time, destiny is all, bitches.